Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Matt Stranick here with my awesome colleague, Dr. Doug Reed.
Hello, everybody.
And we are here, surprisingly, somehow, for episode 8 of the Ed Non-Tech podcast. Doug, we put the first one on, what, like late September or early October, thereabouts? Is that...
Late September is when the hurricane hit me, so it would be early October.
Right. There we go. So we're actually doing, I think, fairly prolifically here. I got to say, congrats to us, man. Coming to your Spotify and, Google things soon. That's my Christmas project, among other things. But, yeah, man. Okay, so I'll just take a moment here to acknowledge that I am on the unceded an ancestral home of the Shkwetmik people here in Shkwetmik Ulu, where teaching and learning have taken place since time immemorial. I sort of had, this whole thing where I was going to, study and go outside and relate to it, but then I've been knocked out inside with the germs from my kid. So my reading, such as it is, I mentioned this before, Bent Back Tongue, the latest book by Gary Goffredson, Shkwetmik writer here, who's it's just friggin', it's one of those books you have to pick it up, and you at least for me, I have to put it down frequently because there's a lot to process there in terms of literature and in terms of what he's talking about. And I don't want to do my whole bedside stack or anything, but I also have picked up Louis Riel.
That's great.
The comic strip biography. Yeah. So, like, for me, it's like I got this stack of more challenging books, and then I got this one which is more geared to entertainment, and I'm just giving myself a pass, on the entertainment tip right now. So that's pretty much all I've got to say as far as that goes. Doug, how about you?
Well, I'm on the unceded and traditional lands of the Mi'kmaq on the east coast of what is now Canada. Honored to be here, and I'm actually sporting the Moosehide campaign. I don't even know what to call it. It's a little piece of moosehide.
Well, you sent me that link in Facebook, yeah. Doug, and can you just summarize for those who might not be aware?
Yeah, it's a campaign that was an Indigenous-led grassroots movement to stand up to end violence against women and children. And my wife, we used it in one of the classes she taught, and she had one left over. So I asked, and she said, yep, sure, go ahead, wear it. So this looks like something I'm going to wear until it falls off my clothes. Because awesome. It's a really important point. And the link will be in the... on the website, and it matters. So that's why I'm doing it. That's awesome. Why I'm trying to represent.
Good stuff. Well, thanks for that, man. I'm definitely curious about this, which I did not actually know about until half an hour ago. So, yeah. So why don't we, since you're the topics guy, we'll go with the, proper title. Retro tech, newer is not all better. So I'm on board with it. I would be interested to know how and why this came to you, bud.
Okay. This is something that I've been thinking about for a long time because I'm an ed tech guy, the new thing must be the thing, right? That's when you look at the research, that's what it is. Here's how the new stuff is better than the old stuff. And I'm like, no, it's about the students and what's best for them. And that's what I always struggle with. And I had some new tech, old tech stuff just in my life recently. And I was like, I need to deal with this. We need to talk about this and put it into an educational paradigm here.
That's where it kind of came. Is that anything you can elaborate on? I sense there's some specific anecdotes here. Not that you need to, man.
There's a bunch. It's like what works? It's my phone. Apparently my phone is, it's a secondhand phone. It's like 5 years old, but it still works. But I'm getting inundated with, oh, you need a new phone. Oh, the new phones could do whatever. It's like, that phone does what I need. That's all I need. It just works. And some of the new stuff, like I have a record player that was built in Montreal in like 1951. It's one of those big cabinet jobbies, and it works. It plays music, and it plays my records, and it plays like LPs. And I was just walking through the campus bookstore, and they had burnable DVDs. And it's like, man, I just got rid of all my burnable DVDs. I don't have anything that will play a DVD now except an old computer that I hold on to just because it'll play DVDs. So it's, what are we doing? Why are we having to go to the next thing? So that's where it's kind of coming from, all that.
Well, no, man, I appreciate that. So I guess as far as my take on this, I mean, I think conceptually and from a practical level, what you described is completely on point. When I sort of was trying to draw personal associations to this topic myself, I did find myself thinking of the notion that, you know, we shouldn't idealize the past, but nor should we, you know, throw it out and, as you say, let, you know, the vendors or budget lines sort of shape learning in ways more, you know, than is necessary. So, you know, there's a bit of, a bit of sadness for things that are past, and a little bit of, I think more than a little bit of optimism for what's coming up. But if we can, I think, maybe just kind of get our collective eyes away from the peripheral advertising for a few seconds, yeah, we might be better along. So
it's, yeah, just to jump on that, I am not trying to say the past was better. It's, I just listened to an example the other day where it was a podcast about explaining how they took lead out of gasoline to make it unleaded. And then they tested kids' IQs, and kids' IQs jumped because the lead was just knocking them for a loop, and nobody had measured it. They kind of knew it wasn't great, but nobody had measured it. So I do like modern amenities. I do like things that head in a good direction. But well, some of the old stuff works great.
But I mean, it's sort of like the Matrix, and I can't believe I'm using that, you know, movie reference here. But you know, like back, you know, when people's IQs were lower because of gasoline, I you know, the lead in gasoline, that was like, you know, the intellectual efforts that came out of that generation or multiple generations of people. It's like, yeah, my IQ's kind of low. Oh, is yours too? It's like, that's a pretty wide-ranging proposition, man. So it's like, it's all, it was at the time, if you traveled regularly in a car, you know, it was all immersive. So it's like the collective experience of those folks driving in cars, you know, with their, I'm thinking cars full of people with low IQs, Doug. That's how wretched I am. You know, but that would have been,
I've driven in front of those people at night.
That would have been the normal operating mentality. Like, oh, we all have this cognitive deficiency, which we don't know about until it's discovered in the study. So,
yeah. Yep.
I really just wanted to, you know, extemporize on the Matrix here a little bit.
The Matrix is one of my favorite shows of all time. I love it so much.
Pretty far ahead of its time. So in terms of these, again, very thoughtful notes that you prepared here, you know, just to sort of speak to this, you have a sort of citation here from Widad Ottman.
Yeah.
About so speaking to the points of accessibility, flexibility, and learner-centeredness. So I guess, would you say, in what sense would you say that, you know, the retro or, you know, you put it, there's a couple terms you put in here. Retro innovation, I really, really like that term, man.
Me too.
So I guess then, in terms of retro innovation, as it were, can you draw some sort of connection, if you will, between that concept and you know, the accessibility, flexibility, and learning centeredness that you are talking about in the first part of the notes?
Yeah. For me, with students, it comes down to what will work for them. So I'm a big learner-centeredness guy. That's what I want. I want what works for them. And I've been the person at the front of the room, and I've been the person in the back, and I've been the person in the hallway when the flexibility and the accessibility haven't been there. And if one of those three things fails on that little that stool, you're not getting student learning. So if you have something that's working, great. It doesn't need to be the next thing. I have, my wife bought me a quadcopter. They call it drones now, right? The little remote control helicopter with the four propellers.
Yeah.
Mine's old. It's 8 or 9 years old. And that's life. I love it. I do all kinds of stuff with it. And I never update the software, ever, because it works. It does what I want and what I need. But I know plenty of people that they update the software and you go to the discussion boards and it's like, oh no, my video's all jello now. It keeps shaking. What do I do? It's like, oh, you had update 3.012. It's like, yeah, wait for update 3.013 and they're supposed to fix that. And I'm like, no, it worked before. Let me get rid of that update.
I'm telling you, man, that's an interesting point. And what came into my mind just as you were talking was that there really is this whole update industry, right? In terms of, you know, they've built an infrastructure with this hardware and these networks such that it relies on the need for these constant updates. Instead of building it properly or durably, at least the first time, which I think, by the way, Doug, is one of the things I've heard people who use Apple products say that they appreciate about, you know, in that they have a tendency to be, you know, they got more longevity. My mother tells me that. She's a Mac user.
Yeah.
So, again, to speak to the larger point, why are we making at institutions, both secondary institutions and K-12, decisions to buy products that are requiring this level of updates and support?
The reasons that I know aren't particularly politically correct. If you put an IT person in charge, everything's got to be Windows, because they didn't take the how do I run a Mac operating system laboratory. So everything's got to be PC, and PCs update when they update. And your computer's new, right? You got a brand new one there. So have you had one of those Thursday morning at 8 o'clock? It's, oh yeah, an hour and a half later, because there's 10,000 things that have to be updated and you can't do anything. You can't even say, no, hold off till later. It comes when it comes. Is that?
I haven't had that experience yet. I'm still within the first, couple of months of ownership, but my past experience, particularly with laptops, I'm using a desktop now because yay me. But the desktop, or the laptops rather, they just get clogged up with this stuff. You know, the bloatware, I think, that is associated with these updates. And really, I mean, you know, they're just trying to grab more of your time. The more time that you spend dealing with a product, like searching on a discussion forum or, you know, doing this and that, that's time that you are effectively contributing to the company, to their marketing and promotion apparatus.
Yeah.
And it's sort of this ancillary way of just keeping you, you know, reminding you that you own this product and de facto encouraging you not just to accept the current update, but to potentially invest in this stuff as well, I think is what's going on there.
And another part of marketing is, in the old days, I don't know if it's still true, they used to reward the development teams that pumped out more features. It's like, I remember when Microsoft Word had like 8 fonts. That's all I needed. But, okay, we've got another 300 that just rolled out or whatever the ridiculous number is. Or, oh, now we can do this with tables. Or, no, now we can do this. It's like, I went through one time as part of my master's study, and we found 124 features in Word that is like, name two people that would use that. And we couldn't name anybody that would ever use whatever that feature happened to be. So
it's building further necessity for itself, because if you have to discover these features, figure out to use them, then you have basically put in an investment of time and emotional and mental effort, right? So, I mean, they got you on the hook. Kudos to Microsoft and the entrepreneurial, you know, billionaire class for providing this stuff. I just think,
I've got an old computer that's like 14 years old. It still works. And I had paid for some graphic software, and that still works. And that's a subscription now from that company. And I still use that computer, whatever, 14 years later. I don't have to pay for the software because I already paid for it way back when. And a friend of mine is a graphic designer. He was a graphic designer. And he had set it up so the colors were perfect. I don't know what that means, but in graphic design land where people can see colors and stuff, that matters. Like, they did all the color correcting and everything was perfect. And he's like, whatever you do, don't get rid of this computer, right? You don't touch it, don't adjust it, it's perfect. And so why would I want to go through, find another computer with a newer operating system just so I can connect it to the internet and then have to deal with all that? If it's already working, why mess with it? It doesn't make sense to me.
I would agree with that, Doug, wholeheartedly. Now,
another part of that is, yeah, if it's working, great. It's like the School of the Air in Australia. Because back in, like, whatever, 1951, the Australian School of the Air, I think it started as the Alice Springs School of the Air, right? Like, Australia's huge and mostly empty. So a lot of kids lived nowhere near anybody else. So they did their schooling on, like, two-way radios. And the kids would get up, dressed up in their school uniforms, and they'd all be on the radio at the same time. And some of that stuff still kind of happens now with online learning, but it's all those people knew how to use two-way radios. And then when the move started to move towards other technologies, they're like, no, we know how to use the radios and we're learning. Why would we do anything else? And it's, you don't need the highest tech solution. You need a tool that works, and this one works.
That's a pretty awesome case study kind of example that you described there, bud.
Oh, yeah. That's T.O. and Othman from 2010.
Yeah, no, that's dope. I find the notion of, kids getting dressed in their uniforms for their CB radio thing. That's just a really precious image to me. I don't know. I think. I just think that's a charming thought there. So you've got the Shelton account here, giving up technology and social media, why university lecturers need to stop using technology in teaching. Okay, that's... that sounds incendiary. That's just throwing it down. That's making no bones about a certain thing, dude. That's...
I met a guy that he'd been a prof forever. Right, since just after electricity was invented, that kind of guy. And he had taken the time one summer, and he found a grad student with really neat handwriting. And did you ever see the overheads? Like, the overhead lamp, the overhead slides or whatever?
They were in the corners of a lot of classrooms at the IRU, at least as recently as, like, late last year. So,
yes.
Yeah.
And did you ever see the ones with the little scroll wheels on them?
I have fond memories of being taught to that way as as the youth and or you know, university student. Yeah.
This I met one guy, and the institution had said, we're done with this, right? And we can't afford the light bulbs are $100 each on these things. We can't afford it, but all of his content was on these transparency scroll wheel things. And he retired rather than convert that to paper or a computer. Because every day he came in and just plugged it into the thing and then did the little windy thing and said, okay, now we're going to talk about this. Y'all got it? Good. Now we're going to talk about this. And he would just wind through his semester, and his whole semester was there, and it never changed. And he wouldn't do anything about it. So
I think that's commendable, man. I mean, it's sort of
dedicated.
It sort of reeks of privilege that, you know, he can just choose to step away from his role rather than make a, you know, different decision, you know, or instead of even hiring a grad student to do it. But, you know, if he's at, you know, late stage or end of his career, and that's the hill that person wants to go up on and be seen, you know, at that point, then really, you know, go to town. See, I back when I spent a significant amount of my time with learning management assistants, I've been probably too hard on that whole experience, you know, these past few things, since this podcast started. But, you know, my opening gambit to people was, you know, what are you currently doing? What would you like to do that you're currently not able to? And I would just kind of try and minimize the gap, you know, so.
Yeah, which is commendable.
Rather than try to get them, you know, into, you know, take on, there's this feature, there's that feature. I mean, you know, it's just like, no thanks, you know. And again, if we're talking about products that kind of continue to build a need for themselves, because I am here and I can take a shot at the LMS industry, I'm gonna. So, ding, got you there, you know, D2L or Blackboard, Learn, or whatever we're calling it these days. So, before we go further, I'm just wondering, like, I really enjoyed that friggin' anecdote about your, you know, that person with the overhead. Do you have any personal preferences in your experiences within the classroom where something retro felt pretty good?
Yeah. And I have a lot of them, to be honest. Picking one, I wanted something that worked. I used to teach people how to use the interactive whiteboards. Normally they call them smart boards, but that's a brand name. I wrote a paper somewhere back there about interactive whiteboards and how to teach people how to use them and stuff. And somebody jumped in at one session and said, oh, you need to do the blah, 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 blah. All right, you got to add the software to the doohickey to make such. And I'm like, no, this works for what I'm doing. This is getting across the learning that I need to get across. The people are learning the curriculum that I want them to learn. This other stuff might work. And they're like, oh, yeah, sometimes it's a pain in the ass. And it's like, then no. I'm going to wait until the user interface works and the user experience is good. I don't want to jump ahead like that. If this is working for me, good. When the curriculum changes and I can't do it with those tools anymore, then I'll find another tool or I'll find another approach. I've never had a problem with that. I'm not scared of the new technology, but so often it's like I had people come in and they had their, are you old enough to remember like the movie film strips where the one slides there, there'd be music, you hit the tape recorder, the tape deck would play. And then when you hear the beep, you move the slide one thing forward to the next picture. Or is that
sounds vaguely weird to me? I don't know, man. That's I can't say I was ever a participant in that. I will say that smart boards, when I was doing my VET training back in 2007, 2008, boy, oh boy. I mean, the province of New Brunswick just upped and bought, at least the school district, you know, that I was in, they just upped and bought a lot of them. And but when they were teaching us the EdTech part one and two modules, that was one of the things where I think the smart boards get a hard rep, man. I kind of, you know, like I was a bit of a fan, preparing these modules, and you know, like here's how I would teach this subject using this format. And then of course I got hired in a place that, you know, they had them, but there wasn't really emphasis with them. And I do wonder if I went back to the same institution, you know, some years later, if it would still be the case that, you know, there's still rooms with smart boards, but they're not being used. And in each of those classrooms, I remember there was like a, you know, thing like a sign sort of taped to it saying, please do not use whiteboard markers on the smart board. Right.
Yep.
So, I mean, if I was to go back to CNAQ, go Canada at the World Cup or whatever, in Qatar, then I don't know. I wonder if they've retrofitted the rooms, if they've taken them out. I wonder what happened to those smart boards.
They're probably still sitting there just being used as whiteboards now.
See, I feel that this is sort of my nostalgia kicking in, because your perspective, I think one's perspective, that is, on, you know, what worked and what didn't, and these kinds of things that we're talking about, it's something where I had a train of thought, it started to chug.
Okay.
I'm at a loss. I'm just going to pass that over to you, friend.
For sure. For sure. What one thing that I look at with the old media is we already paid for it. So places that don't have, you got it? Are you on my train of thought now?
I'm on your train of thought now. And yes, you've already paid for it. Cost has already been invested.
So like we have some schools and places where they're poor, right? They don't have a lot of cash. And if they bought an LP 30 years ago and it isn't scratched and it still works, you use it because they can't afford to have their streaming service to wherever, especially if they've got cruddy internet. And if you take a look, how are so many schools built, right? They're built like concrete bunkers and the Wi-Fi signals just can't come through unless you got like a Wi-Fi repeater in the hallway out next to every school. So it's, part of what we did is when we built these buildings, we built them so tough that it stops some of the more modern technology from working well. So why not go back to the vinyl records, right? Why not go back to like analog cameras?
Well, I think, and also where possible, allowing, for a robust digital option. It's not to say, you know, again, this isn't like an either or proposition, I don't think. It's not like you kind of got to go one way or, you know, that's it. I think it's a case where, we're trying to, you know, find what is the best comfort for the instructor. And if the instructor, you know, is comfortable with that format, then, really, why not, right? So record players, cassette players, 8-track tapes, CD radios. I'm telling you, man, I feel like we ought to try and do a podcast, you know, recording it, perhaps, the audio on a CB radio. You know, we could like grab out some, we could grab out some of this stuff, or like, you know, I could send like you a tape of my part, or you could send me a cassette tape of your part, and then I can slice them together somehow.
I know a company that we can do the recording and send it, and they'll put it onto an LP. So that I would love that.
I think if having like an LP pressing of certain episodes of this, just do up, I don't know what the minimum order is, but just do like, you know, four or five of them. And just like that, my friend, is forward thinking. That's retro innovation, my good sir.
Yeah. And I want it to be gold. I want the record to be gold. So when I frame it and put it on the wall, I've got a gold record.
Yes. Platinum, you know, diamond. Why?
Yeah, whatever. What do you call two sold? What would two be? Wood? Or talc? I don't know.
The Wu-Tang Clan put out one copy of one of its records. Yeah, and it ended up being a terrible thing because Martin Shkreli, you may recall, the pharma bro, the dude who like used his capitalist venture to jack up the prices on AIDS medication before he was chastised and thrown into jail. He ended up being the guy that bought the one Wu-Tang record. That's a random story, but it's also one that speaks to the point of, well, it's got incredible value to have one or two, you know? So maybe one of us will kill. Maybe one of us will kill a famous politician.
How about you? How about you do that? I'll be the one they interview.
I knew that guy, you know. And then he just started talking about Jane Fonda, you know, for a week, and it just went down. And okay, I'm steering.
Oh, that's a callback.
I'm retro, man. I'm trying to reach into your generation. I was alive when that.
Oh, dude. Dude, yeah. We are close to the same age. That's 20 years before me.
Just
I don't have a walker or a cane yet.
But if you did, it would be a significant honor to have lived to that age. Here's something I really liked in the notes here, dude. Innovation has become an escapable buzzword in recent years.
Yeah.
That's you, man.
It's newer doesn't mean better, right? We had to buy a new stove. And it's like, oh man, the old stove was 25 years and it was awesome. And this new stove might last four, right? It's planned obsolescence. They make sure that you're going to buy it.
Oh man. That's fantabulous right there. Planned obsolescence. It's like, what's the lowest quality item that people will pay for at the maximal value? That seems to be like, you know, what will cause them to have to get a new thing every 2 or 3 years that you would not accept in other kinds of products. It would just be like, what? No. But because it's, you know, technology, and there's this notion, like, I think where, like, limitless expansion, I mean, it's like, it's sort of like this notion that if the economy isn't growing, it's stagnant. You know, it's like, why is there this presupposition of endless ongoing, growth in these areas or expansion or whatever? Does that make sense, bud?
Well, that's a basic component of capitalism. It is, right?
Yeah, expansion.
Right? It's look what happened to India. India was one of the richest countries in the world. The Dutch East India Company shows up and the English show up. Suddenly it's bankrupt and England's had an industrial revolution. I wonder where that money came from. And look at North America, right? Nobody discovered it. People were here. Right? It's not a discovery.
So this is where, you know, we're talking to this notion of like the bad old days, right? Like we're not like saying ad hoc, like, you know, throw out the future, you know, it's like, but the discovery doctrine is so fucking toxic and harmful and, on American Thanksgiving. Is today American Thanksgiving by chance?
Oh, the other Thanksgiving? Yeah, I think so.
I think based on some celebrities that I follow on Instagram, it is. So,
well, We already did Canadian Thanksgiving, so that's cool.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Good stuff.
So, part of this thing is innovation. It's like sometimes stuff just works. Why not? Like my parents ended up with a loom that was like 150 years old. I didn't know how to use it, but it still worked. It still made blankets or cloth or whatever it was supposed to make, and it still worked. So yes, you can innovate things to make things safer, but most of this innovation is away from the person-centered and more towards something else. I don't know if it's marketability or corporate profits, whatever. That's another whole story. Because a lot of what I was talking about with this retro tech is the amount of stuff that sat at the back of the room that nobody touched anymore, but it still worked. When we have schools built the way they're built, like, they may not have good cell coverage, right? A lot of schools say, no, you can't have phones in class, right? And it's like every time I'm in a meeting now, or if I go to a conference and I don't have access to my phone, so I don't have access to the internet, I feel like half of my brain's been cut off. But they just won't work
half
in those buildings.
Half of your brain has been cut off. Yeah, no, man. That's one of these kind of things where, you know, and it's easy to make a policy like, you know, we're just going to arbitrarily say, you know, we're going to switch to something like bring your own device, BYOD. Or, you know, something like 2 years, and then like 2 years later, oh, that didn't work. Students, you know, don't have equitable access to those devices either. You know, or so it's, I don't know, man. I think it kind of speaks to your thing where rather than, you know, every couple of years just trying some experiment in the interest of probably, you know, justifying a budget line, you know, it's like, you know,
look at the graphing calculators. Why the heck has a generation of students had to buy graphing calculators that they use in one or two classes, and then that sits in a closet or sits in a drawer? Since when did we push those costs back to the students for something they're never going to use again? Right. I was working with my nephew, and really smart guy. Right. He had to take a course outside of his discipline. He had to take some kind of English or arty kind of course. And that wasn't his focus. He was in business. And I showed him how to make an APA paper. And I showed him all the tricks and why this mattered and why that mattered. And he was like, why isn't this taught in high school? How come I'm just learning about this now from you? And I said, 15% of the kids go to post-secondary. Why would you teach that in high school, right? And maybe 30%, whatever the numbers, because I know it floats. But why would you teach it for like 2 out of 6 kids? The other 4 out of 6 are never going to use it and couldn't care less. What are we doing? I say that a lot, I know. But
well, no, but I mean, I think, you know, maybe to speak to that train of thought that I, you know, was on and then got off later, I think what it is, you know, you don't necessarily know these things until you had some experience just kind of working at a few institutions, you know, being in a few situations. And, you know, you may actually, I mean, I've done so many, you know, I don't want to say half-assed, but like, you know, things in the classroom. I just thought I'd give them a try. But for the most part, you know, what I was relying on to do with them was really typically just like a browser and a projector, because that was what I felt comfortable with. You know, for the in-person thing. But I look back to that guy who had like binders full of notes at the ESL Agwon in Korea, or, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, I could point to any number of experiences just like we all could. But I got a sort of warm place in my heart for those things that I tried that did not work, right? So
there's so much tech out there that they tried to use it didn't work. You ever use Microsoft Access? the database thing. But they pushed it. Like when I was doing my master's, that was a thing. Oh, you got to teach them. You got to teach them how to do databases. Teachers are going to need to know. And I'm like, no, they're not. Not, no way. I couldn't name two teachers that would ever use to build their own database. They use them, but they're not building their own. So it was, well, teach them how to use a flat database. And I'm like, well, what's a flat database? Oh, a spreadsheet. And it's like, no, that's different. Right? Like, what are you doing? So we're taking a step into Access, then we're coming back to Excel. It's like, yeah, Excel worked better for what teachers needed. It was about what the learner needed to do. And it's just, yeah, sometimes we take the step. I've done that in relationships. You ever been in a relationship and you're cruising along and you're like, oh no, what have I done? And then you either live with it and figure out how to cope with it, or you move on. Right? I have people that I was friends with for years and years, and we just drifted apart for whatever reason, right? It's, you take a look, does it work? Is it making your life better? What is it? Is it Marie Kondo? Does it bring joy?
Yes. Yes. I was just thinking that, man. Like, that's how I treat my vinyl. I mean, if we're talking, you know, people who are kind of obsessed with retro formats. But with me, I mean, I'm not going to try and explain my convoluted system by which these, you know, 7 or 8 shelves of records, one of them at a time, makes its way onto the turntable, because that's a whole process. But what I also do is make sure that anything I don't immediately want to listen to, I get rid of it. I send it to Value Village, or, you know, I see if I can get some credit at Barnacle Records, downtown Kamloops. And so I hear you, man. Does it bring you joy?
Yeah, and some of the examples, some of the little cartoony things I shared with you are examples of stuff like some technology shouldn't have been tried. Somebody tried it, and it's like, okay, this was a mistake.
It takes
strength, and it takes a stand-up person to say, yeah, that didn't work. We got to head a different direction. Like the textbooks. Textbooks to e-text, and now we're back to textbooks because students are renting Access to the e-texts, and it's like, no, I want a piece of paper. I want a pile of piece of papers. Sorry, go ahead.
No, just to say, at least to have the option, really.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say, like, out of the graphics, the one that kept me kind of chuckling this afternoon while I was reviewing and getting ready and whatever, early experiments in transportation. I love the Far Side, man. That's just,
oh yeah.
Yeah, totally. Speaking of retro, again, you know, a retro-ish comic strip. So I think we're probably hitting the time here, dude. I think we've sort of
for sure
spoken to this from a few different angles.
I got two other little examples of going retro.
Okay.
Because I'm assuming you were old enough to remember when Mac had one button. And then they went to 4. They had the Super Mouse or the Mighty Mouse or whatever they called it, and it was 4 buttons. And then they realized that's a disaster. Let's go to 2, even though PCs have been sitting at 2 for decades. So they went out, they tried something, and then, oh, no, gotta go back. That's why I threw that picture of the Mac up there. Like,
absolutely.
What's the best number? Where are we comfortable? And the Douglas Adams stuff, I'm just a fan of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy because it's ridiculous. And I'm just a sucker for stuff.
Okay, I saw you in the document after I had been in the document. And then I was like, oh, okay. So I'm just scrolling through and I'm just seeing this Douglas Adams now because that wasn't there 2 hours ago, Doug, but that's cool.
No.
Okay. Shout out to Douglas Adams. And Hitchhiker's Guide, clearly.
A lot of what I'm thinking is, I'm a big firm believer in Charles Darwin with evolution and how the things that change a certain way thrive better than others. And I think it's expensive to do that in education. It costs a lot of money. It costs a lot of teacher time. It costs a lot of student learning opportunities. So sometimes we have to turn around and go back to what worked better before. And where I would like to leave it.
I absolutely would not want to leave it anywhere else, but that is awesome. A good, sort of summary or caveat at the end. I guess I'm just going to say it's always been a pleasure. It's always a pleasure.
I love it.
Yeah, good stuff, right? So I guess until next time, which I think based on the current schedule should be roughly this time next week, right? So.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Okay.
That is the plan.
Take care, everybody. Bye for now.
Right on. Thanks, Byer. Everybody. Bye-bye.